Well, thank you for doing this, Tristan.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I'm a big fan.
Oh, good.
That helps, doesn't it?
Always.
When did music come into your life?
Well, it was always there as far as I can remember because my father is a musician and I grew up with him playing the guitar and singing. And the folklore in my family is that I could sing at the same time as talking. The beginning really for me started doing acting in musical theater and that kind of thing at a young age as well. So it was kind of like something I was really interested in doing, performing. So I started in my hometown when I was a freshman in high school. I started playing this coffee shop that opened, and they would give me two sets, and I learned covers, you know, because I only had four original songs. And then that sort of turned into like doing the circuit of coffee shops in the suburbs of Chicago. And then my father was driving me up to this place called Java Joe's, and every Saturday I would do a residency where I would, you know, play my original songs. And I was lucky enough to kind of find, you know, avenues to be able to sing, you know, in a microphone in front of people, which is what I ended up figuring out how to do for a living. And I've always been able to write songs, and they weren't very good when I was 14, but, you know, I've always been able to write songs easy, not hard for me.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's true.
So no prolonged agony of, okay, what am I doing with this song?
No, because I never even had a concept. I never had the concept that I wanted to be a songwriter. I just started writing songs. You know what I mean? There was no like talk in my house of you could be an artist, this and that. It was very basic. It was like, this is enjoyable for me. I have all these feelings. I'm a teenager. I'm going to write these songs and I'm going to strum out chords so that I can sing something. And to this day, I mean, it's not hard for me to write songs. I can sit down and do it. It's just about, you know, now it gets to the point in my life where it has to be for a reason because, you know, you can write a million songs that never see the light of day. Well, I want to take it to completion. And so I'm working on ideas, you know. And now it's a matter of finding time being a mother.
That was going to be my next question. You're juggling all these things, marriage, now a baby, and you're in a band and you're trying to write tunes. A form of insanity, do you think? Obsession?
Totally. But also, life is a pretty boring thing if you don't find things that give you joy. And I don't know, I guess I'm just the kind of person who has found something that I enjoy doing that is work, but that is also fulfilling. And so for me, my partner is also obsessed with the same thing. So it's, you know, you kind of create a world. And I live in a city with all people who are obsessed with the same thing. So I guess it becomes very normal. And you know, it feels really good, I guess, to find a piece of art that really speaks to you and to say, oh, I'm not just going to listen to this album over and over again. I'm going to learn it. You know, that's kind of how I experience music. So it's hard for me to relate to a lot of the criticism about music, you know, music criticism and you know, talking about it, because to me, it's like my connection with music is learning it and experiencing it. I'm consuming it, like literally consuming it, eating the music.
Yeah, music critics are like people who haven't had sex talking about sex. To me.
Well, that's an interesting analogy because I would say that music is a lot like playing music with other people is a lot like having sex in the sense that you lock in, right? You lock into some kind of next wavelength and the groove is something that's felt and it's not about being impressive. It's about being connected.
Your song, Eager for Your Love, tame that nasty shrew because she knows what you're up to. Got to keep her thin and hungry so she's eager for your love.
Well, that's about breadcrumbing as well, I guess. I think that, you know, if you know what someone's doing to you or you understand manipulation or when things are unfair, you're a shrew. I mean, I think that was a real feeling of mine when I was younger. And part of that was probably because I was so confident and unafraid, but also it's the same thing. It's that person that keeps you eager for their love it's actually a defense mechanism on their part because they're really incapable of having intimacy. And so you're asking for intimacy and they're only able to keep you just that close.
Right. Keep you at arm's length, in other words.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So when you say don't believe that it's a curse, don't believe it's so much worse, don't believe that it's a curse, it's just intelligence.
That's to women.
Of course it is.
Don't believe that it's a curse. It's not a curse to be intelligent and to question. And so it's kind of like a given now with the Me Too movement and all of these sort of major movements to talk about what it's like for women in male-dominated fields. So, but, you know, back then it was just a feeling that I had that I felt, well, I just was around a lot of people that were deceiving. You go out into the world 18 and you're like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and you have never had your heart broken, right? And no one's ever lied to you. So you go out into the world and you expect people to tell the truth. When that song was written, I was 24. People that I trusted, you know, that I was working with that ended up saying one thing to me and knowing that I was young and naive, trying to pull one over. When you get deceived by somebody, anybody that you're working with or you're in love with, get cheated on, anything like that, that's... a real part of growing up and going out into the world. And if you're being honest, it's a lot of times met with, you know, shock. Like, why is this person so honest?
Absolutely. No one's going to know.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Sure. That one's about, it's about being a gangster. Not that I know about being a gangster, but that's the same idea of, when you are a soldier, but you think that you're going to be able to climb to the top, but you're just a soldier, right? And so you'll be sacrificed before you advance. And so it's about you're just a runner for the show. Honestly, if you think of like the television show The Wire, and you think of the kids on the corner, right? They're just trying to survive. They're trying to make money. There's a lot of different reasons why they might be there. But they never make it out. They either go to jail or they're killed. And no one ever remembers them.
Can we move on and talk about the song Got Some?
Well, that's a song about suspicious late night phone calls. It's a song about staying with someone even though you know you're not completely into them, but they're reliable. And maybe they're safe because they love you more than you love them.
I love the line, I think you're pretty cool, but as a general rule, I'm going to hang back here. Have you ever said that to somebody?
No, I haven't. I've only written it. So I guess I've said it to a lot of people. Well, the hook is, at least I know I got some if I need some. I mean, it's not about, you know, I'm madly in love with you. It's, you're there for me when I need you, and it's about a booty call, really.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't going to suggest that to a poetess. Can we talk about your song, Glass Jar?
Well, sure. So I don't know if you've ever had to do a bug collection, go out into the field and you find an insect, let's say a butterfly, and you trap it in a glass jar, and then you take it inside and you get a cotton ball and you dip it in alcohol and you put it inside of the jar, and then you freeze the jar and the bug, and then you take a pin and you drive it through the heart of the bug, put it onto a piece of paper, and then you identify it. And this song, Glass Jar, is about people that make you feel that way in conversation.
I love the line, don't take the bait, let the haters hate. Being in broadcasting, oh my God, that's so true. And people do develop ideas of who you are just by listening to you on the air, as they do you as a musical performer.
Absolutely. And I think that's the point, is like when you put yourself out there like that, you have to sort of be ready for the comment section. Right? You have to hold your head high, and that's kind of one of the biggest lessons I learned of my 20s. You know, I used to be a very, like, a hothead, an angry person. I used to run to conflict like some kind of warrior, and I was part of the problem. And I think that one of the lessons I learned was how to remove myself, you know, from conflict. And it's a really, it's funny. The older you get, you know, you get to the late 20s and these same life lessons start to sort of like hit you over the head, and you keep getting hit over the head, and you either decide one day to duck, you know, you learn what's coming and you decide to figure out a better way to do things, or you, it really, life can get pretty rough for you.
So Edgar Allan Poe, dream within a dream. I'm going to read one of your quotes that Rolling Stone put up. You also obviously have an affection for Shelley and the great poets. You say, "They finger the wound of mankind, prodding at how mercurial this reality is, conscious as participation in a shared reality, and how the sands of existence creep through all hands." That's well done. Well said.
Thanks.
How did you discover that?
Well, I was moonlighting as a tutor for an online tutor, and I would do English and essay writing for college and grad school students, and I read and helped analyze that poem one day, and I just loved it so much because I really like poetry that sort of, like I said, fingers the wound of mankind, the wound being death and our fear of death and survival being this impulse that we're living out, right? Even though we survive pretty easy, we have like a lot of systems in place to survive now, but you know, ultimately death is coming for everyone. And dream within a dream, I mean, there's that quote at the end, you know, "Oh God, can I not grasp them with a tighter clasp? Oh God, can I not save one of you from the pitiless wave?" It's about the pitiless wave. It has no pity and it's going to take you. I just thought it was a really great idea to talk about the final good night. And I wrote a song that was originally a lullaby, but I thought it could be a lullaby to sing your baby to sleep, but then it could also be, you know, a lullaby for life, like, you know, a goodbye song. And it's called Say Goodnight. But it comes after these poems. But I just really like these classic poems that sort of live on, just like Shakespeare, you know, the language of Shakespeare. And, you know, Edgar Allan Poe is a little bit hard to understand, right? Maybe a little bit dense. But it lives on and the ideas live on. I've been thinking a lot about, you know, what makes us human is this, you know, idea, this shared reality and this idea. And although history books tend to talk a lot about wars and governments, art is really telling the story of time. And this is a, you know, Joseph Campbell, myths. Myths can tell us a lot, and art can tell us a lot, and it's been saying these same stories over and over again. And the sorrow of living, I think that we try to make ourselves feel pleasure, but, you know, we have a lot of ways that we find pleasure in society, and but we also are always dealing with that pain, that existential pain. And we hate to feel temporary. We hate to feel temporary because what happens is when you feel temporary is your life becomes trivial and we want to feel special.
We are special, kiddo.
Well, that's the thing. As a race, we are special.
Absolutely.
You know? And what we pass down is special. And, you know, even if you don't have children or if you have children, what you teach them, that's special because that's the story of love. And that's really what it comes down to. I've got another song called Story of Love that's on my new record.
On Sneaker Waves?
No, a new one. I'm working on a new record right now.
And the other song is forthcoming on the new album?
Yeah. It's been fun to be pregnant and have a child and then just write only songs about love, because you start to really think about, well, what am I going to pass on? And it's interesting too, because they're inside of you while you're making things and singing, and then they come into the world and they respond to those same things that you were doing when they were inside. It's truly a miracle to have a healthy child.